Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Breonna Taylor.
Charlena Lyles.
Corin Gaines.
Sandra Bland.
Alexia Christian.
Maya Hall.
Megan Hockaday.
Tanisha Fonville.
Natasha McKenna.
Tanisha Anderson.
Aura Rosser.
Shanique Proctor.
Michelle Schuzo.
Pearly Golden.
Gabriella Navarez.
Yvette Smith.
Miriam Carey.
Kayam Livingston.
Kayla Moore.
Shelly Frey. Sorry.
Melissa Williams.
Alicia Thomas.
Chantel Davis.
Charmel Edwards.
Rikia Boyd.
Sharice Francis.
Ayana Stanley Jones.
Tarika Wilson.
Catherine Johnston.
Alberta Spruill.
Kendra James.
Latanya Haggerty.
Margaret Laverne Mitchell.
Taisha Miller.
Danette Daniels.
Frankie Ann Perkins.
Sonji Taylor.
Eleanor Bumper.
These are the women, Black women, who have been murdered, killed by police, dating all the way back to 1984. And today on Beyond Surviving, we are going to take a moment to pause and really present these women, their lives, their stories, and their names. We are going to be exploring the intersection of the Me Too movement and the Black Lives Matters movement. And I have here with me someone who I love so very dearly, Mrs. Latia Parker. Say hi, Latia.
Hello, everyone.
Latia is, first and foremost, just an amazing woman. She is full of love, full of grace and wisdom, and I had the great honor of walking alongside Latia as her coach. She's a Beyond Surviving graduate. And as I was thinking about, you know, everything that's been going on in the world right now here in June 2020 with the Black Lives Movement, I just knew that I wanted to have a conversation today to explore this. And I knew that Latia was the person who I needed to have come and have this conversation with me. She has founded SOAR, Speak Out Against Rape, in 2009. She has been at the heart of the civil rights movement, and I just want to dive right in and have a conversation today, Latia, to explore this topic and to really honor the women. Part of what also set off this conversation today is Latia sent me an article that was really taking a close look at why are Black women being kind of left out of the conversation. So Latia, maybe let's start by just introducing yourself a little more and letting people get to know you a little bit here.
Well, my name is Latia Parker. I can add Stewart to that now because I just recently got married. So, yes, and I founded SOAR in 2009, which is Speak Out Against Rape, as a campaign to basically prevent and raise awareness about sexual assault. And in that, we found such a need for so many other resources that so many people still needed help. So we founded Flourish, which is an organization that's up and coming to help people move forward after the trauma of sexual abuse. So I've also worked with the National Voting Rights Museum in Selma, Alabama, which is one of the mothering places of the civil rights movement. And I've worked with, I still currently work with Bridge Crossing Jubilee, which is the annual commemoration of celebrating the Voting Rights Act and the Selma to Montgomery marches. And basically, also, I've worked with one of the biggest law firms, civil rights law firms in Alabama. So basically, kind of living in Selma, Alabama, you know, which is a very historical city, and getting to be close to and talk to a lot of people who were involved in the civil rights movement. So I just kind of put my ear to their hearts and listened. So I've learned a lot.
Thank you for that. Yeah, I appreciate that work that you're doing, you know, historically, still up until today, and you're continuing to thrive and expand and bring in, you know, bigger and better, and just continuing to really reach out and make a difference in your community. And really seeing you come into like your voice and your power and your influence has just been super, super amazing as a part of our journey together. And something that we were talking about before we started recording today, you mentioned that there were some women, you know, we were kind of looking at this through a historical lens, and educating me right on the spot, like, hey, Rachel, what about these people? If we go all the way back to these civil rights marches, the men even then were really being highlighted and talked about, and the women weren't. And you mentioned a couple of women, Amelia Boynton, Annie Cooper, and Marie Foster. And so maybe we can just even start there. Like if we start through the historical lens of the civil rights movement and what was happening then, such that women still weren't really being highlighted or brought into the conversation.
Well, one of Miss Amelia Boynton, who just recently passed in 2015, she lives to be 104. Her and Marie Foster, they are two women that I admired. And actually, I lived on Marie Foster Street in Selma, Alabama, and I had no idea who she was. And so I started working for the National Voting Rights Museum, and I'm just going through the museum looking, and behold, I see her dress. And her dress is in the museum with her shoes, and the blood is still on her shoes. She had the hose is still in her dress with blood on it, where she was one of the marchers that was beaten in 1965 in Selma, Alabama, trying to cross the bridge. So she was one of the front people in that march, along with Amelia Boynton, who has famous pictures all over the web where she was beaten, where they had to basically carry her out. She couldn't stand. So this was, you know, so when I saw these women and how active they were in the movement and being part of the Courageous Eight as part of the ones who invited Dr. King to Selma, Alabama, so they were already working in this movement, you know, they were already very active and doing a lot of work, but they don't get the recognition, you know, that others, you know, that the males would get. So I just kind of, when I was looking at that, I was just kind of like, oh, wow, you know, how come I didn't see this in the history book? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was just a lot of unsung heroes that I met and encountered who was doing a lot of work with the movement. And they were even risking their lives to be beaten. They were marching. They were leaders. So that's part of why those names came up for me.
Thank you, Lydia. I think it's so critical. And, you know, one of the things that I noticed as I was, you know, sitting with the idea of exploring this topic and where the intersection is of trauma and how that exists between the Me Too movement and the Black Lives Matter movement. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about the pros and cons, because, you know, to be very honest, there's a part of me as a white woman that tiptoes around this in at times of trying to look for parallels. I think there can be pros. I think there can be cons. And I think it would be helpful if we even just articulate that piece. Like, what? Where are the intersections? What do we see overlapping? But also, what do we need to take into account as very distinct and different so that we honor each of these movements as their own thing? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, one of the intersections I definitely see is they're both uncomfortable topics for people. Definitely uncomfortable.
Right? Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, I was actually thinking about something, Rachel, and I was thinking about, you know, how a lot of long-term sexual abuse survivors, how it's like when you kind of bringing up what happened to you, even though this is your horror and you had to live this, it's almost like, hey, you putting the secrets of the family on display. You know what I mean? You're dishonoring the family by telling what's going on. So now it's making the whole family uncomfortable. And it's, I kind of feel the same way about the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, when we're bringing up the history of what happened and, hey, this is still hurting us and this is long-term, really, it's long-term, it's abusive, you know? So it's like, hey, now you're bringing up the secrets of the family and we don't want to deal with this. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So what I watched between Black Lives Matter and Me Too movement, I watched a lot of people wait ready for it to go away. You know what I mean? So they were bitter, you know, because we have put the secrets of the family of America and or the secrets of the family of our abuse on display. And so now everybody's uncomfortable. So they're kind of two subjects I see that's very hard for people to deal with.
I think that's such a brilliant point. Yeah. That we are seeing a stripping away, an unwillingness to just pretend, something very similar that we saw, you know, back in the 70s when women were coming forward more, when Courage to Heal was beginning to, you know, Britain, I think Courage to Heal was in the 80s, right? And there was this, you know, drive to say, we're not going to pretend. We're not going to just act like everything is okay here, that the way that we're being treated is fine, just fine. And here, in a very collective way, we're championing the same messaging to support, you know, pulling away all of this, you know. I think this has been, for me, one of the biggest pieces that I've been seeing happening, which is this space in which we've wanted to believe that we are this country where all of these things are actually happening. Women are treated well. Black people are treated well. Aren't we just the greatest country in the world? But we're having a reckoning right now with that, because all of that pretending is falling apart and it is making people really uncomfortable and people don't necessarily know what to say. People are afraid of like tripping up, saying the wrong things. But yet we're being called to find our voice in the midst of all of this. For me, that's one thing that I see as a thread of commonality, is finding our voice, finding our power in the space of being able to stand up for what really matters to us.
Mm-hmm. And using our ability to listen. You know what I mean? Because, you know, for me, being a long-term sexual assault survivor and people just kind of saying, well, what could I do? Could you listen? You know what I mean? Instead of just wanting my pain to go away, just listen. You know what I mean? And even with racism, if we just listen, you know what I mean? Because there are, both sides have issues about it. You know what I mean? So we can just listen. You know what I mean? And that's one of the, definitely one of the pros that, you know, I think that one part of the reason both movements blew up so big was because people just wasn't listening. Mm-hmm. You know, and it just came forward with a force that is like in your face, like, because this is not just 10 people. This is not just 20 people. This is not just 15 people. These are millions of people who are telling you, hey, this is happening. Yeah. So I think that's definitely a pro.
That's a sound, such a sound piece of advice. I think there's a lot of white angst around, like, how do I fix it? How do I solve it? Oh my gosh, I feel so bad and so guilty. So what do I do? And in some ways, yes, please get involved, you know, activate yourself, use your privilege for good. But at the same time, what I heard and what you just said is, like, be careful about trying, like, stampeding over the pain that's there. Just as we as survivors, when we come forward with our story, we don't want somebody to just say, oh, get over it already. Oh, that was a long time ago, right? Yeah. Okay, well, let's just fix it up and make it pretty again real quick. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to have the time to really sit in the pain and in the recognition of it and in the acknowledgement of it before we can find that space. And that requires listening. That requires being willing to hear each other's stories.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when you talked about, you know, just taking time to sit in the pain, you know, I think about as a sexual assault survivor, you know, how for so long, it took me so long to even come into the real connection of what I was feeling. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't articulate, or I didn't have the words because I went through so many different emotions. And then when there came a time for those emotions to start pouring out, I went through my moments of, you know, anger, rage, and, you know, just all of that, because now I'm totally realizing what I've been a victim of, you know. And it's been with racism, you know, so many times, you know, you've experienced it, but because you have to keep going, you don't have time to process it. You just have to keep going. You have to keep moving. Yeah. And sometimes you just, you constantly see it. It's blatantly in your face. Even when I go to a doctor, you know, some people may have to worry about, hey, let me just find the best doctor. But I have to look and say, okay, can I find a good doctor and one who's going to treat me right because of the color of my skin, or who's going to just look at me like I don't want to touch you? Because, you know, you're going, those are things that we experience. Yeah. So I have that on my back as well. So it's like I'm trying to, and for me also being an abuse survivor, when I go to a gynecologist, I have to also say, well, do they have bedside manner? You know, because are they going to offend me with the way that they come in the room? You know, so I have to, so with some people, just like, let me go to the OBGYN. Well, I have to let them know ahead of time, you know, hey, I'm an abuse survivor.
Right. Right.
So I'm going to need you to handle me like this. And, of course, you get those who are willing to listen, who understand. You know what I mean? But then, yeah, if you have those who are insensitive to your pain, then they're not, it's going to be a worse experience for me. So yeah, that's, so what you're saying about listening, it's a great point.
Mm. Something you said there that made me think about a workshop I was in, maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, that was around trauma-informed practices and how to use them for yourself, of course, but then also how to take them back to your clients and these sorts of things. And during that weekend, we were doing an exercise around safety, and the facilitator was asking us to think about a time in our life where we felt safe. And after the exercise, one of the women in the group spoke up and said, this exercise has made me really, really angry. As a Black woman in America, there are very few spaces and places where I feel safe. And the entire weekend really became a conversation about race. And it was uncomfortable, Lydia. Like, man, it was tough. And what I noticed happening quite a bit was this desire, particularly among the white folks, to find this space of like, but, you know, we're all human. We all have experiences that are in common. And that just was not landing very well. And one of the things that I'm hearing in our conversation is there's this place in which we can find commonality, but we have to really be mindful about the places in which our experience experiences diverge, right? Like, yes, you and I, as both having had experiences of sexual trauma, have to navigate a conversation with an OBGYN differently than a woman who has not. But there's an additional piece of the puzzle there for you that is not there for me. And so for me, it's always this interplay of where can we find the commonality, not as a way to dismiss
right.
the unique experience, but as a way to find alignment so that we can come up with common solutions, but how can we still keep acknowledging the places in which our experiences diverge? Because I think if we lose that piece, then it starts to sound like kind of a pat answer. And I don't know, what's your thought about that?
I totally agree. And with sexism, racism, I noticed it comes up, you know what I mean? Because even, you know, going back to what we was talking about with, about Black women kind of, being the afterthought, you know, I have actually talked to some of my male, civil rights leaders who are actually out here and they're protesting and they're sending me the videos and stuff. And I'm saying, hey, you know, you didn't include women right here. You didn't make this statement. And so I go and I say my point to them and they'll come back like, give me these names, give me this. And I think going back to listening, being willing to listen, being willing to hear, to see how we can change that. Mm-hmm. You know, so how we can be inclusive, because, you know, you may think you're including a person, but it's a different section of people, but they may feel unincluded. You know what I mean? So you can't say to me, hey, I'm including you and I don't feel included. You know, so you got to listen to me if I tell you I don't feel included to what you're saying. Yeah. And so I'm drawing on both, you know, because even where you didn't feel like you fit in certain places as being a Black woman, you know, I also think about how I was the outcast because I was the person who was sexually abused. So sometimes when I came to the family reunions or I came around certain things, I kind of was the outcast. You know what I mean? I was treated differently because that stigma was on me. You know what I mean? So now I am the person who's looked at or the person who, you know, I really don't want her to come because she's going to make everybody uncomfortable. Mm. You know what I mean? So I've had to kind of face that on both ends. So even though I'm the one that has experienced the injustice, I'm still making everyone else uncomfortable because I talked about it or because I spoke out about it.
Right, right. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. So, you know, we ourselves are intersections of all sorts of different experiences, right? And so we're holding that. Even if others can't see it on the surface or recognize it, we ourselves are holding this experience plus that experience plus this experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember I was talking to a friend one time and talking about my nephew who's biracial and talking about the fear that I was having about, because he lives in Ferguson, Missouri. Hello. And, you know, like when all of that was happening, you know, experiencing that fear of like, oh my gosh, like, you know, this child that I love, right? I consider him, you know, more than my nephew. I really parent him. And I remember this backlash of, no, you can't feel that. Why would you feel that?
Mm-hmm.
You don't understand it. You don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so these places in which, you know, I don't know what I want to say but more about that, Lizzie. I guess there's a frustration I think that we feel in the space of, can you see my story? Can you see my experience? Both in and outside of the context mm-hmm. of what this physical being represents. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Does that come up for you? Does that resonate with you? Do you?
All the time. And a lot of what it feels like to me that people have up is a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
And it's all like it's such a defense that, you know, at any shape, form, or fashion that I have to, like, hear you and it's going to put a crack in my armor, I'm automatically offended and I want to set you down.
Yeah.
Or your feelings are not validated to me. And I think if, you know, even with me being a person with sometimes going back, confronting some of the people who, you know, abused me, I would, you know, I had to let them know up front, you know, I'm not here to tear you down. I'm not here to do X, Y, Z. And from there, we was able to have a conversation because they immediately jumped off defenses. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they, I was literally coming on the attack. And see, that's the other side of it. We have to make sure that we're not coming on the attack. Because, and I was very clear about my agenda. My agenda that I want here is healing. You know what I mean? Not for me to, and it's the agenda that I want between us needs to be healing, you know? So that's what I'm here for. That's my purpose. It's not to tear you down. It's not to hang you out to dry. It's not to tell you about all of the things that you've done against me and how I, you know, I want you to own your responsibility, and I'm going to even own my responsibility. You know what I mean? So allowing this to fester for so long, and because I want you to be accountable for your actions and I can be accountable for mine, then we can move forward. But if we keep seeing each other as a threat, like you see me as coming to you as a threat and I see you coming to me as a threat, then we're going to always be, you know, defensive. And because of, I think a lot of the narratives have been put out here because of the, people that's on the defense. So it's immediately, you know, I was looking at, I think, an article today about where they were still coming up talking about, you know, kneeling in the NFL. And people still taking it to be that the reason that he did this was because he wanted to disrespect the flag and disrespect the, you know, and they're still
seeing the point.
After he said this over and over and over again, and even after this is in your face, people still saying, no, he's disrespecting the flag and XYZ. And so he was still missing the point. And so that's because you have people that's on the defense. This is just too hard for them to deal with. So I think that part of it is taking our defense down and saying, you know, hey, I want to be able to actually hear, you know, what's being said to see what I can actually do.
Yeah,
you know, moving from that place instead of moving from a place of I'm already coming in this, I'm going to listen to this much, but you're not going to tell me X, Y, Z. When you come with that type of mindset, you already coming with your ears stopped up.
It reminds me a little bit. I was just watching this show, Hip Hop Evolution, and it was talking about Afrika Bambaataa and how he set up this conversation with all of the street gangs in the Bronx to come, and they yelled it out, right? They were upset. They were talking, well, this is what happened, and this is what happened, and this is what happened. But at the end of that, that's when they created this idea of the Zulu Nation, and it became this entire, like, collective experience where all of that pain and all of those things that had caused people to break apart no longer mattered, and they became a community, right? Mm-hmm. And to your point that ultimately what we're trying to do here is live together to support and love each other, to create a space where everybody can thrive. Mm-hmm. So we have to get past the parts of ourselves that are wounded in some ways, like give voice to it, such that we can hear each other more fully, more distinctly. We can hear ourselves in each other. I mean, Latia, I think this came up so much in our conversations when we were working together, right? And in the community group space, don't we hear all the time sexual abuse survivors say, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. Wow, you feel that way too. And in the space of hearing that, we feel bonded, and therefore we feel invested in each other, right?
Yes. And going after the cause, you know what I mean? Because we all had that common cause of what we had went through. So it didn't matter. I think in my class, I think we had some people represent every group, you know what I mean? But in the end, we were all experiencing pain. We were all able to connect on levels beyond, you know what I mean? And to me, I felt like I gained sisters, you know what I mean? Because it was, you know what I mean? And
right.
We had, because we were willing to listen to each other. We were willing to hear each other.
Right. So in that space where we come into this sisterhood, part of what I want to really get at today is how the system of patriarchy is still at play here. Because, you know, patriarchy is not white men. It's a system in which it ranks people, right? Yes, they put white men at the top, and then this, and then this, and then this, right? And so now we're seeing this patriarchy playing out. I mean, this is my opinion. I want to hear if you agree, where, gosh, how do I even say this with sensitivity? Like this hierarchy that black men are, you know, above black women. This is all bullshit and nonsense, but this is the socialization that we've received. Like, do you think that that's at play, or do you think that's just one piece of the puzzle that's at play? Why women, black women, are being, as the article named it, treated as an afterthought in the Black Lives Movement? What do you think are the factors that are contributing to that? Patriarchy, something else, all of the above?
It's exactly that. And I think it's just because I think with the fact that we as women, we also face sexism. You know what I mean? So if we face sexism plus racism, you know, we're going to get it on both ends. And, you know, as I was listening to some of the people who are doing the Black Lives Matter protest, not the people who started it, because I wonder if a lot of them knew it was started by women, like majority women. You know what I mean?
So, right. Yeah, exactly.
But I think that, in all honesty, I think that women are so used to taking the back role. You know what I mean? Because that's what we've been trained and that's what we've had to do. So even when we're going back to talking about the civil rights movement, you know, and I think about how these women, they didn't get the highlights of other civil rights leaders that the males did. Mm-hmm. And adding to that, you had Ella Baker, you had Fannie Lou Hamer, you had, you know, Claudette Colvin. You know, you had to be like a certain type of, you know, even when I think about with Claudette Colvin, she was the first person to actually sit down on the bus. She was the first person who was actually arrested, but they wanted her image. She didn't fit the image. Uh-huh. You know, 15, she was pregnant. You know what I mean? So
oh,
she was
gosh.
Like, who was 15 and pregnant. So when they wanted Rosa Parks over her, so males made that decision. You know what I mean? So she didn't get the recognition because of she didn't fit the right type of image of what their, you know, woman should be. You know, so I and I want to be careful with my words here too, but we honored her actually at one of the events. Parks was the first to do that, but it was actually Claudette Colvin who was arrested for that first. So that's just one, you know, males was just like, hey, you know, you don't fit the image, you know what
right.
I mean, of the right type of woman that we need to be the face of this movement. It's
wow.
not you. So basically, wow. we choose Rosa Parks to do that. And so also when I think about, you know, going on, and I think it's going back to how we've always been taught that we had to support, you know, men. We had to support them. We have to just take that back role of cooking, cleaning, you know,
yeah.
parents taking care of the home. So I think that's just a role in society that we have, period. And so I question a lot of the times when I saw, you know, certain injustices happening towards women, why wasn't the voice as loud for women, particularly black women, as I saw, you know, it was for the men? You
yeah.
know what I mean? Now, some people make the argument that it was because of, you know, what played out on camera. So I then sent
mm-hmm.
some people a video that went viral of one of the homeless black women who was beaten real bad by a police officer, and there was some outrage, but it was nothing like how it was for black males. You know what I mean? And even when
yeah.
I go to, you know, looking at things like domestic violence and how many of them lose their lives and stuff, and how it's just never even pretty much an afterthought. It's no outcry. It's no, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And
yeah.
No, because we have like high cases of women dying, black women dying in our two cities that I've lived in from domestic violence. And it's just almost like,
yes.
It out, they deserved it. You know what I mean? So it's almost like the pain is, you know. And when I think about how they were taught to stay in their place. And sometimes I get frustrated when I hear them say, you don't know what it's like to be a Black man in America.
Mm.
And saying, we understand your pain. We don't understand fully your pain, but we support you and we're listening to you through your, you understand? That's why you're going to see two times the amount of us out here. We're going to be protesting. We're going to be on the line. We're going to fight.
Goodness, right? Yeah.
But what I see is, you know what I mean, that voice for Black women. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like your last. And even when I was telling someone, even with the presidency, I said, you know, we saw a Black man become president. We saw a woman who, you know, Hillary Clinton, who ran, who still had more votes.
Right.
I said, I don't think even some of our Black men would support a Black woman being president. So that's part of, so I feel like we have that gap there.
There's a gap. Yeah. Like, this is really fascinating because, you know, one of the things that we're, I think, trying to explore is where are the places of divergence, right? And so you hear this languaging of like, white people can't understand the pain of Black people. And then you're adding to the conversation that Black women can't understand the pain of Black men. Like, what is going on here? Like, why is there a competition? I just don't, is that even the right word? I don't know. But it's like, what is happening such that in order to validate our pain, we have to invalidate the pain of somebody else?
Exactly. And that's going back to, we have to listen to each other, to be willing to heal, you know, because even as I, do you know how hard it was sometimes me coming from a place of being a woman who was taught a lot of feminist ways, so I could just easily dismiss their pain. That, you know, I'm being honest about that.
Yeah.
Because pain I've seen women go through. But then to actually have to listen and let my guard down and say, oh my God, I see where, you know, we hurting you here. I see where this hurts you. I see where you feel disrespected by us here. So that in turn made me see myself and change my language. You know what I mean? And I think that's an important factor, that you have to go back and hear and listen. And even as I was having a conversation with a friend of mine, I said, you know, when I think about Black women, and even when you're going back to slavery, you know, when you're seeing these women stripped on the block and basically fondled, and then they could even be raped on a plantation in front of people, and it was no justice, wasn't no police to go to, and your man couldn't help you, your husband couldn't help you. So, but yet after you had to experience that trauma, you still had to go home and take care of your husband. So you still had to put your feelings on the back burner. You still had to kill what was inside of you because you had to do what you had to do for your household. And even, I think they said, even where we had a 74% rate of single mothers, you know what I mean? Because we don't get to disappear. We don't get to run, you know. Still have to take care of our responsibility. So it's always putting your feelings on the back burner, and you always have to take on the whole situation of others. And then because of what our Black men face in America, you know, if we feel like we've been violated in some type of way because of how Black communities don't trust the police either, so you like, well, we don't want them to die because of it. So it's leaving you to take more. So we're also called stupid a lot. You know what I mean? And I've seen blogs and how certain protests is done in racist manner, talking about how dumb Black women are to stick with Black men when they do this and call us this and blah, blah, blah. But we're also in situations where we don't want to turn them over into situations where it's going to cost them their life. It's going to jeopardize, you know, because we still in situations. And then as mothers, we also have pain because, remember, we also raising these Black boys. We're also, they're growing up men. So we have a whole nother, like, I have to teach my son differently about, you know, the world as some people teach theirs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm telling him, watch your face, watch your demeanor. Make sure you make eye contact.
Gosh.
Always smile. Don't just walk at night where you look suspicious. So I have to teach him these things because I got a big football player looking son. And,
right.
and So that's like my nephew is a big guy. It's like, yeah,
right. But I have to do that with one person in my family, right? This is your community, right? Mm-hmm. Your collective family. There's so much in what you're saying, Latia. I need like 5 hours to unpack everything that you just said there, because there's a whole hell of a lot that you're articulating and that you're identifying for why we see the repetition and why we see this profound gap in how Black women are acknowledged and named in this movement.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just sitting with that for a minute. That is a hell of a lot to be carrying. You know, when you wake up in your day and that's there, and the fact that you can't call on the people, there was this, this is maybe a silly reference, but Empire, there was a scene in Empire where, you know, the son was beating up his mom. He was, you know, raging, and Cookie Lion, Taraja, what's her name? Henderson. She calls the police, and that was the biggest part of the entire fight. Like, I can't believe you called the police here to my house. And I remember sitting there just like really in full recognition, like, this is one of the ways in which my life is very different from the lives of people of color, right? Mm-hmm. That you have to consider, do I even call?
Mm-hmm.
That there's this place in which you have to educate, you have to raise your children, you have to have conversations with your children, you know, about things that are just really so ridiculous that we have to even do, but we still are to this day having these conversations. Man.
And I think we have to continue to change with the times as well, because I even remember that this thing came up at the school where a lot of the guys were getting in trouble for what they call sexting or sending body pictures of their body parts. And, you know, but this wasn't, you know, but at the time you had so many parents who still had no idea, you know, that this was even a thing,
right?
You know, because you know the fullness of what cell phones were doing, because some of us were still on flip phones, you know.
And
the children get in trouble.
Yes.
And I came upset, and I said, well, no, we got to have a way to educate them, because a lot of them didn't even see what they were doing was wrong. They didn't even understand.
Yeah.
You know, so it's okay. So now, you know, we have to change what we're saying, you know what I mean, and include this, because, you know, it was a lot of guys, they were in trouble and they didn't even see what they had done wrong. Like, she sent me a picture of hers and I sent up her a picture of mine. But now they were in trouble for child pornography, even though they're all high school kids around the same. So it was like, okay, so now we have to educate and have this conversation and add this ruling, you know. So that was, so it's like with our children, our conversations are ever evolving, because these are things that they would get in trouble for, like literally. They were ready to prosecute a lot of the kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
They were, and you knew some of these kids literally did not know that this was this type of crime they had committed.
That it was even a problem. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that education piece is so, so important. And, you know, I think for what I appreciate about the times that we're living in is that there are conversations that are happening. I've never in my life as a white woman had as much access to conversations, to trainings, to materials, to resources. Like, there literally is no excuse. There's no excuse to be ignorant on this topic. And of course, it's tough because there are just people in this world who are going to listen to our conversation and find everything wrong with it, right? Like those are not the minds we need to change. It's similar to what we're facing with this upcoming election, right? We don't need to change the hardcore Trump supporters. We're not going to get those folks. But the people who are questioning, the people who are wondering, the people who are thinking, hey, maybe the way that I've been taught all my life, maybe that's not actually how it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can reach out to them and we can get education happening there and change hearts and minds there, right? I mean, if I even just look at myself, I grew up in a small town in Oklahoma It was a segregated town. I didn't even realize it was a segregated town until I went to high school. We had one. And I walked in on the first day of high school. I was like, who are all these new people? Right? And they're people of color. But my first register with them was new people because I've been going to school with the same kids. But it wasn't until I started hanging out with the kids who were new to me that I started to understand, holy shit, your experience in this town is very, very different from mine. And I'm still learning, right? And I still have a long ways to go to get, you know, my head wrapped around all of the things that are there. But it's absolutely possible, you know, for people to, and just as we're trying to change the conversation about sexual assault, about incest, bringing those conversations to the table and helping people, parents get educated, people get educated about how to look for the signs, what to do, how to respond. You know, we're tackling so many things, but there's so much crossover that I think it's just really important that we understand that a lot of the things that we do over here, we can bring and we can use over here. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And, you know, just, you know, I think about, you know, even with us, and I always go back to our sexual abuse, things, you know, so much had been untackled for so long. So, of course, you get to a certain place, you do feel like it's overwhelming, like, I got to deal with all of this. You mean all of that I have right here is not right? You mean I could have been doing X, Y, Z? So it can seem overwhelming. But, you know, we was taught in our support group, you know, we take one day at a time. You know what I mean? We take on the issue at a time, and that's how we deal. And we make sure that we're not contributing to that. You know what I mean? And that's one of the greatest things that you can do is make sure you're not contributing. You know what I mean? So that was a good point you brought up.
Well, we're just full of good points today, aren't we? I think we're figuring it out. No, I mean, it's so true that a lot of times in the face of something that feels really, really big, we get overwhelmed and then we just shut down and there's no way forward. And so we just keep doing what we've always done. But it's really great to just think about what's the smallest thing that I can do when it comes to healing from sexual trauma? What's the smallest thing that I can do to change the conversation about race in my life, even if it's just with yourself or with your community, with your partner, with your spouse, with your family? Where are your points of influence? And you don't have to be, you know, a huge, you know, standing on the stage in front of millions to have an impact. You can make a change in your own life and in the lives of those who are right there around you. Awesome. So, Latia, I really came on the call today, you know, thinking that we would solve all of the world's problems.
We will have to do a year of these, probably.
Goodness me. Oh, my gosh. You know, but what I'm really is just so profoundly connected to you is just the importance of having the conversations. Even if we don't necessarily come to a place of solution, which is so uncomfortable. It's so uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. But I think the theme and the thread that's really come through in our conversation today is that we just have to listen to each other. We have to hear each other's stories. Be able to listen from an open place without that defensiveness, without trying to outdo each other, and to find the places in which we can stand together so that we can go out, particularly as women, because we are marginalized. And if we can get our shit together and our voices collectively together, world, watch out. What would you like to say, final thoughts for our listeners, anything you're present to from our conversation?
Well, one of the things that, I guess I was hoping we would have got to the common things that, you know, that we hear people say.
Oh, let's do that. We can do that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's make sure we make room
to that.
Because
I had a lot of those.
Yeah. Let's go.
You know, I wanted to say, you know, two of the things that I saw happening with the Me Too movement and the Black Lives Matter was people like fighting to change the mission and fighting to change the, you know, and that also got in the heads of people. And even though you could hear the founders saying, no, this is not what this is about, this is for this reason.
Mm-hmm.
You
you still saw people trying to fight to change it and then, you know, starting to make a mockery of it.
Yeah.
You know, so even when I think about Black Lives Matter, it came about, you know, because of police brutality. It was never saying that, you know, all lives didn't matter. You
yeah.
know, it came from basically saying that, you know, Black Lives Matter also. You
Correct.
Know what I mean? But people yeah. continue to fight to make the narrative be about something negative so that they didn't have to deal with it.
Yeah.
So it could anger more people. And then even with the Me Too movement, she kept saying, no, this vision was, this came about with, you know, for women of color. I founded it for this reason. And, you know, yeah. so that they could have empathy. This was about the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And they made this, they villainized it, making it to be like a weapon to take men down.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
I watched that happen with both movements. You know,
mm-hmm.
and so some of the things that I really, that's two things I saw in common, because again, those are two very uncomfortable topics
yep.
to talk about. And I saw I even saw a lot of women who were upset about the
mm-hmm.
Me Too movement,
which
mm-hmm. was shocking to me, which wasn't really shocking because,
yep.
you know, when I think about a lot of situations where women, you know, they actually were sometimes, you know, even within my own family, some of them were more angry at me than the actual perpetrator.
Yeah,
so because
right.
I outed the family.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and I wanted to, you know, about the common things, you know, I was thinking about one of the things, just get over it. You know, whew. That word, I hate to hear it about racism and I hate to hear it about sexual abuse. That is
yeah.
one common word that I just don't like to hear.
Yeah.
Like, literally, when I think of long-term trauma, you know what I mean? And I was having this conversation with a friend of mine, and she had just, you know, she was a victim of just someone raping her when she got in her early 20s. And so she didn't understand a lot of where I was coming from. You know what I mean? Because
mm-hmm.
I've also been through rape, but I was also molested. So there were certain things about my situation she just did not understand. She couldn't relate to.
Right.
You know? And when, so we both had trauma. We both had experiences. But there was like a long-term trauma that I had. So she
yeah.
couldn't understand why I kind of had, I guess, what they call Stockholm syndrome around some of my abusers. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? She couldn't
mm-hmm.
understand how I could be around them, how I could see them, how I could just still love my family or particular family members after, you know, certain things was done to me.
Right.
But when I think about the long-term trauma and when you're not in touch with it, and then you suddenly start to get in touch with it. And now I'm dealing with these feelings. And now I'm realizing what happened
mm-hmm.
to me. And now I'm at a place where I'm trying to define what kind of woman I want to be and how I want to deal with it. And I'm going somewhere with this. So I thought about, I remember I was at one of the Jubilees, and before he died, Reverend F.D. Reese, who was one of the Courageous Eight, he spoke. And he talked about, you know, when he was, you know, he was a victim of racism, a time when he was slapped. And he said when he was slapped, you know, he couldn't fight back because he was, you know, a part of a nonviolent protest. And he said that slap made him a man, because that slap made him make a decision on what kind of man did he want to be, you know. And I thought about that, like, wow, you know, in the face of violence, in the face of trauma, in the face of racism, what kind of person do I want to be? You know what I mean? So I can become a person to fight back. I can become a person to fight the wrong way, or I can become a person who can fight the right way. So I can take the time to learn how to communicate my voice
mm-hmm.
in an effective manner and
yeah.
not give over to the hatred and the anger. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So because if I give myself over to the hatred and the anger, I feel like I have now allowed that same thing to enter into me. And now
yes.
the very thing that I was fighting against, the very thing that violated me, I'm now violating others. And I don't want to be that woman.
And, you know, I remember Dr. Bernard Lafayette, he said, you know, violence is the language of the inarticulate. You know, people can learn how to fight quicker than they will learn how to talk.
Yes.
So it's easy for us to shut people down in a violent manner. You know what I mean? Because we don't want to talk to them. We don't want to communicate. So I know one of the things you said, what we learned is one of the most powerful tools we have is to listen, but to also learn how to effectively communicate what's going on with us. You know, and that's why I do like this, because here it is that you're white, I'm black, but we're joined through love. Both of these causes have touched us and affected us deeply. Yeah. So rather than, you know, me coming to fight you or you coming to fight me, we're both like, how can we, you know, move forward in this? How can we help other people see and be able to help and support each other? So that's, you know, so even in getting over it, when you're dealing with long-term trauma, and I keep hearing people, you know, they make things, say things like with sexual abuse victims, well, why didn't you say something earlier? You know, why did you wait this long to talk about it? You know, and we, so that's why you should get over it. It was so long ago. And then I'll hear with racism, people say, well, it was 400 years ago. It was slavery. You should just get over it. And I'll tell them, I said, you know, I'm looking at women who are 50, 60 years old still dealing with the effects of how they were sexually abused. Because guess what? You can't give their virginity back. You can't give what you've taken back. You can't give it back to them. It's a fight. We rediscover it. We take it back ourselves, but you can't give it back to me. And just like with slavery, how do you think it was just 400 years ago? When we go all the way back to, we just got the Voting Rights Act signed 55 years ago,
right,
and it was just only extended for another 25 years, which is still another insult. It's not permanent. It's they signing it to extend it every 25
right. years. Isn't that crazy? Oh.
And I said, we still have grandmothers and grandfathers
yes.
who was infected with syphilis. You understand? We still have grandmothers. My mother couldn't vote. So how do you think that this is still not a sensitive issue? And when I think about trauma, I think about, and Rachel, you can understand this, to be the best mother, to be the best sister, to be the best daughter you could be, you know you had to, you had to face that you needed healing from your trauma, you know? And I think for us to be the best that we can be, we have to face that we need healing from the trauma because it affects us. It affects us 20 years later, 30 years later, if it's not dealt with. You know, it can still affect us negatively. And when I think about the trauma of, you know, African American people, and I'm looking, I'm saying, well, wow, with even if you go back and you say, well, the slaves were free, did you offer them counseling for all of the trauma that they went through? Did you go back and get their children and put their families back together? Did you go back and get their grandparents? You can't give it back. You can't give it back. So the only thing that we can do is acknowledge what happened, face it, and we can try to heal and move forward. And that's just the stance that I choose to take. Like, I choose to stay grounded in love no matter what. You know what I mean? So I take the stance to, I have to hear it. You know what I mean? And I have to face it. And even though this hurt me, all people didn't do this. You know what I mean? This all people didn't do this. And some people just fell up under a system that this was the way it had to be. They had to follow the system. You know what I mean? So I understand. So I think if we're communicating on all levels, you know, I think that this will. So I want to reiterate that point, too, that it's very important that we learn how to communicate.
And that is why everybody, Mrs. Latia Parker, give me your last name again.
Stewart
needed to be here today. that right there. I'm going to have to listen back and like take it in again. But what I can tell you that I'm so present to is exactly these two calls of action. Please listen. Please get your ego. Please get your prejudice. Please get your pain out of the way so you can listen. And please communicate. Talk about your pain. Talk about your experience from a place of here's what's so, from a place of love, from a place of let's hear each other, from a place of nonviolence so that we can love, so that we can heal. Because I am 100% on the same page with you. At the end of the day, this is trauma. This is trauma being activated in our world and trying to heal in a very global, in a very collective way. But it's the individual's healing that will add up to collective change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Mm. That's true. Latia, you are always a beacon of light, of hope, of love. Your voice is extremely powerful. Your viewpoint, your experience, and I am amazingly blessed to have you in my world. You know, I called up Latia like 3 days ago, was like, can you hop on and have this conversation with me? And she was like, yes. And so your willingness, your availability is, it's all with deep appreciation. And I just thank you so much for this time with you today. Do you have any final words for folks listening?
Yes, I just want to say that I think if we want to see our nation move to a place of healing, just reiterating what you said, we have to get to a place where we can communicate, and we have to get to a place that we can hear. And I think those are the two main things, you know, and even as people are asking the question, why so much violence? Why so much, you know, because sometimes when people are unheard and they feel like if they can't articulate what's being said, this is not that we condone it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Saying this is just a part of, you know, the rage and, you know,
exactly.
that people feel, you know what I mean, that they've been holding inward for so long. But even I want to say to those, you know, stop what you're doing, because we don't want to hurt other people. We don't want to hurt innocent people. That's not the agenda. You know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
So even when we put up these signs and we protest, we need to make sure that in our hearts we are being led by love and we are really being led by unity. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
not being consumed, so consumed with the cause that it has consumed us, and we are becoming the very thing that we're fighting against. And that's what we don't want to do. So.
Yes, agreed, agreed, agreed. So I hope all of you listening today will really take some time to sit back and consider, you know, where the intersections for you in your own journey, in your families, in your communities. How can you listen? How can you communicate? Look for resources. Again, there are so many things that are available. So if this is something new that you're exploring and try, whether it's sexual trauma or racial trauma, you know, go out, look for those resources. And of course, thank you for being here and being a part of our community, the Beyond Surviving. And just thank you for tuning in and joining us. You can pop over to rachelgrantcoaching.com to learn more about sexual abuse recovery coaching and check out the other resources there. Please be sure to subscribe to our podcast and come back next time, because we have so much more to share. And until then, take good care of you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.